Ladies and gentlemen, Back Gig Studios Lounge is proud to present The Gig Cast. To the Gig Cast. This is Gig Cast show 182. It's about a couple days late, but here it is. This is the first post MegaCon show, and what I decided to do instead of just putting up something quick last week is I knew there was going to be the webcomics panel on Saturday afternoon of MegaCon, and I was going to put that out, and since it's going to be almost an hour long, that is show 182. You'll still have your regularly scheduled Gig Cast coming up this Friday with a couple of interviews that we got at MegaCon, as well as your webcomic news and stuff that you expect from your Gig Cast. If I sound a little different, a little hoarse, number one, I'm recording on just on my laptop here without the whole setup. Number two, I was spent the weekend singing The Hero of Canton while wearing my Jane hat, so my voice is a little shot, and there may be a little touch of con crud in there as well. But anyway, it was a great time. Great time was had by all the people that were there for Night Gig. It was a fun time with Carl, Scott. It was great seeing Scott in person again. Casey Green came down, and you all know Casey Green. Wild guy, loads of fun. And we had more people come to the Night Gig dinner this time at the Ponderosa. Loads of fun. We'll talk more about what happened at MegaCon next week, or later on this week, when Scott and I get together to record the news segment for the show. So we'll tell you what. Without further ado, let's get right into the 2009 MegaCon webcomics panel, put together by Mark Meckeson, myself, together. Worked out really well, really great stuff. Hope you enjoy it. And we'll catch you next week on the regular GigCast, so when the panel's over, so is the show. All right, folks, so until next week, enjoy webcomics and 2009 MegaCon webcomics panel.
Web Cartoonist Choice Awards, which didn't happen or may happen later on, we don't know. But for now, we decided to turn this into a webcomic panel. We have a plethora of webcomic artists up here that are going to be here to just take your questions. But first, we're going to start ladies first on this end and work our way down. We'll each do a brief intro, so if you don't know who they are, you will. So, start off with Jenny.
Got a mic?
My name is Jenny Breeden, and I do autobiographical webcomic that's updated every day, and it's called The Devil's Panties. And yeah, it's about conventions and comic shops and pirates, you know, the usual.
My name is Dave Chabet. I write a comic called Dead Winter, .cc. It's a comic set in a zombie apocalypse setting, but it doesn't follow the kind of horror genre of the normal kind of take on the zombie problem. It's kind of a, you know, more of a fun kind of, doesn't take itself too seriously, kind of action-y kind of comic. And I've been doing it for about 2 years, and it's a lot of fun to do, so.
My name's Casey Green.
Hello.
I do a couple comics. I do Horribleville, which is a semi-autobiographical comic, weekly, and Gun Show, which is daily.
Woo! I love you.
I don't.
Sorry. Hello. Microphones. I'm Mike Mayhack. I draw a webcomic called Cow and Buffalo. It's an all-ages serial update weekly kind of thing where they get into really stupid adventures, and sometimes those adventures last a year or so before they come to a conclusion.
Watch some good adventures.
My name is Mark Mekas. I also do several comics. For the last 9 years, I've done Comic Zortic. For the last year or so, I've been doing ETIPI, and the last few years, I've been the writer for Abby's Agency, which I do with Tiffany Ross.
My name is... I can't do the whole mic thing. My name is Ryan Somer. I'm the writer for Least I Could Do. It's a comic about sex. Nothing sophisticated there. And I also write Looking for Group, Stand Up Fantasy, Worlds. I've been doing this for about 7 years.
And I'm Krishna Sadasivan. I draw PC Weenies at PCWeenies.com. I also have an autobiographical strip of what it was like to grow up as an Indian kid in the U.S. called Uncubed at uncubedthecomic.com.
You're Indian?
Yeah.
All right, so now what we're going to do is we're going to open up the floor to questions. So we've got a wealth of knowledge about webcomics and comic in general here. So does anybody have a question? Please.
Okay, well, I want to ask the girl. Why is your comic called The Devil's Panties?
It's a fabulous question. I have no idea. let's see, the short version of the story. It's a way to weed out anybody who could possibly be offended by anything in the comic strip. If you can get past the title, then you're not really going to be upset by angry feminists or pirates sleeping around at conventions or Jesus the Devil smoking pot. So it's an easy way to lure in people. They think it might be naughty, so they show up thinking it might be porn, and then they get addicted to the autobiographical strip because it's hard to sell autobiographical to people. They're like, well, that can't be funny. And I said, have you been to a convention?
Go ahead.
I notice in a lot of humor comics, they'll start off funny, and then after a couple of years, they'll try and be dramatic, and over time, they'll become more and more dramatic until it's not funny at all. It's just sort of a dramatic thing. Like, what's y'all's take on that? Like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Or
anybody?
Oh, I'll throw that one.
Yeah, here you go.
Thank you. I'll give you an example. There's a comic that I won't name because that's implied and unprofessional. It's called Control Delete. if you're a gaming comic, right? Do you really need a story arc about a miscarriage? Is that absolutely necessary? I think there's, you know, to answer it seriously, there is a balance that you can find. I think most people get bored writing a certain genre or a certain way or a certain method. So you want to see what you can do with trying new things, which is what we all should be doing. But some people just don't know how to find that balance between the two.
Do you find that humor is hard to draw? Because I
hard to draw? No, it's pretty easy for me.
I find that between, you know, horror and romance and all of the emotions that you can evoke from somebody, getting them to laugh is the hardest. Do you find over time it's hard to keep people laughing?
I find it's hard to make them laugh while at the same time telling a story. You know, you want to, most of us do daily strips a few times a week. So not, you know, what you got to realize right away is not every single strip has to be laugh out funny. They can be set up, they can be setting something in the future, either the next day or a week from now. Not everything has to be hilarious. You know, like, look at Garfield. When's that ever been funny?
It's funny when Garfield's going to
be happy. Yeah. I actually bought that book.
Nice.
I don't know why.
It's funny.
Who's next? What do we got?
Yes, sir.
From a business aspect, you know, you see a lot of the webcomics that are out there where they're carrying down a full-time job on top of what they're doing, and then you finally get that breakover point where someone goes full-time. From, like I said, from a business aspect, do you have to get, like, a doing business as a DBA, or do you incorporate? Or, I mean, how do you handle that part of, you know, the back end that no one ever sees?
You get a girlfriend.
Who's got this one? Anybody?
I could feel one end of it. The pre-business end to it right now is I do my comic, and my comic is... it takes a lot of time to do because I do a lot of tone work, so the average strip takes me about 24 hours to do. And I work that with a 40-hour job. And I do that twice a week, so you can tell that... So something has to get cut, and I kind of cut sleep out of the problem. But, As far as the business aspect goes, as far as I'm, you know, this is my second year actually doing a webcomic, and I've kind of built a little bit of an audience, but I could tell that starting up as a business, the first thing you really need to focus on is making sure you have a product to market. And that's a lot of the hard work, and I think that's where a lot of people kind of drop off the webcomics thing, is they don't realize, you know, you need to have the product to sell, you need to establish a product, and there's a lot of, you know, I guess a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and sacrifice to actually work and build that up before you can start selling that to the markets and start getting people to be a potential audience. And, you know, they come to your site with the, you have ads up, and they get the ad revenue, and they buy the merchandise. But the first thing, at the very foundation of everything, is to build something that would actually draw people to you, and that takes a lot of work, and that's kind of the point where a lot of people drop off. So, but I'm sure.
As far as the business side, it's you learn as you go. I haven't started. I didn't incorporate until last year, and I've been doing it since 2001, so about 8 years. It wasn't until last year that I actually got all the stuff, the LLC and stuff, because I wanted to publish. So it's learn as you go. How have you guys found for business side?
Last person to ask about that.
I think one of the challenges with what we do is there isn't business model.
Good work.
Thank you.
There isn't really a business model that is the magic ticket. It's different things work for different comics. You know, every comic is kind of a unique entity. And even within that, what works this year might not work next year. So, you know, things are always in flux, and you have to be willing to be really, really flexible and, you know, really sometimes creative in how you make your money.
I did least I could do it for about 3 years before I decided to make money off it. I actually paid an artist to work with me to do 6 scripts a week. At first it was just, you know, I grew up, I wrote journalism, that doesn't make sense. I wrote journalistically. For me it was kind of an experiment, whereas I could see if I could do it. After 3 years I decided, you know what, I like doing this, I enjoy it, I want to see if I can take it further. So the next step is, how am I going to take it further? We kind of went a little different way than everyone else did. I have a very large business background, so I partnered with a buddy of mine named Randy Waxman. Every company needs a Jew, and I'm Jewish, I can say it.
Good thing.
And so what we did is we did the old school method is we went out and we got investors. And we got a decent size of cash, and we decided, okay, this is our product, we have some money, let's see what we can do about growing that product. We blew through the money in like 2 months. Like, really, you can't piss faster than we could spend money. It was, but from there, we kind of found one thing that worked, and then they kind of built, and it just kind of took off, but we incorporated right away. My thing is webcomic guys who are just starting out always ask me, should I incorporate? I think yes. Because you never, especially in this country, you never know who's going to sue you. And you just want to protect yourself. And, you know, anything can happen right now to Blind Fairy Entertainment, which owns this type of do, looking for group and other properties, and I'll be okay. I'll be upset, but I'll be okay. So incorporate. And if you're an artist, be an artist. Don't try and be something you're not. If you're a business guy, well, what are you doing in webcomics? But find an artist to work with, or, you know, vice versa. It's don't be what you're not.
How do you suggest finding the business guy?
Yeah. It's not easy. Any local synagogue will do. Seriously, I hate all these people. But no, the best thing to do, most of the talent that currently works with Blind Ferret are people who started out like as fans, as readers, and I created a relationship with them. Like Tyler Martin, who creates everybody's website right now, we became friends, and he's working for us pretty much full time right now. And it just, you build relationships that way, because we're all in our little corners, our little offices. We don't go out, right? We don't. I go home every now and then. That's it. So you just gotta find people that way, because it's our only means of communication.
Yes, sir. I'm back there.
What
What is y'all's opinion? Now, I don't know all y'all's work, but starting independently versus going under a collective like D3 or, you know, one of those webcomics, Keen Spot or something like that. What do y'all think about that as a business model?
Read the contract.
Yeah.
So, do they own your work? I mean,
oh, well, that's why you read the contract. I was invited to Keen Spot, and I was like, oh, wow, thank you. Now let me get my glasses on and read this contract. And I made sure that the contract didn't have any rights to any of my stuff and that I could walk away anytime. In the contract, it says that I can only put anything online with them. So I can't post my stuff on DrunkDuck or anything. But yeah, you have, and if you've got a friend who's in law or business, have other people read over the contract, whatever collective that you do go under, and so that you can stay independent. I can walk away from Keen Spot any time, but they're providing me with a lot of tech support that I need.
Did it boost your readership?
Yeah. To a point. I think that you should use any resource that you can. Before I signed a contract, I had posted my stuff on everything that I could to get readers in. But yeah, as far as starting independently, if you're on your own and you can do that, you have enough background business-wise and advertising and knowing that computer thing with the internet, and you don't need help with that, then just use all the resources you can. But yeah, anytime you go into a collective, read the contract.
That's kind of a point building on that. As far as reading the contract goes, I did run into a horror story kind of early on. When I was really starting, I was approached by a gentleman who runs a little comic label, and he, you know, takes some web comics and he sells them in print comics and conventions, and that seemed like a pretty cool thing, you know. Oh. I'm just starting out with a comic, and this guy says, oh, I want to print it as a book, da-da-da-da-da, you know, all right, sit down, read the contract. One of the stipulations in the contract is that the label would have the right to take my artwork and all the writing that I do, and they could print off books with my stuff, go to a convention that I'm not at, and sell it for profit that they pocket. But the other side of that is I could take other work and sell that for whatever reason I want to. And I said, no, sir. You've got to be careful about that, because there are people out there who would try to, you know, try to sneak something at you. They say, oh, well, you know, sure, we can take your artwork, we can take your writing, we can, you know, print the books up ourselves. We're covering the cost of the books. We're driving to the convention. We can sell it for our profit. But you could take this, you know, little story that you have nothing to do with, and you can bring it to a convention, and you can sell it. And it's like, no, I don't think that I like that too much. So you do have to make sure you read everything to make sure that you're not getting any kind of situations like that.
Yes, sir.
Can places like Cast on Keen Spot be money?
Ad revenue, yeah.
Strictly ad revenue.
Strictly ad revenue. Keen Spot just recently changed their model slightly in that they used to manage the advertising and split it with you. But now they've opened it up so you can run your own advertising and keep the majority of the profits that way. They do have some other projects that they're doing that offer some other opportunities for making money. They do a little bit of their own print work. They do some other side things that are optional. You can get involved if you want, but for the most part, Keen Spot is pretty much just a host. Your involvement is totally voluntary. You know, they you pay a little bit for your hosting, but at this point, they're kind of letting you do what you want to do. So,
Keen Spot's been very chill with me, and I was telling you earlier, both a lot of collectives I've been a part of, I've kind of been the guy to be like in the back of the room doing his own thing. I mean, that's cool. I'll be a part of anthologies every now and then. I'm still doing stuff with Night Gig, even though they don't host me anymore. But
love you anyway.
But with Keen Spot, they really are pretty chill about all that stuff. Yeah. I don't even do the box, the news box stuff.
Oh, no.
Someone does that for me, and I get a huge spike of readerships. But other than that, I just kind of do my own thing. So they've been pretty chill, and not all collectors are like, sign a contract here kind of stuff. Some of them are just like, hey, you want to be part of our fan club? Or not fan club, treehouse form?
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. And,
Before we go on, I just want to join in here, because I see collectives and associations opposite from how these guys look at it. I say don't do it. I don't believe in it. I think if you want to make it in this business, you do it on your own. I'm not saying, like, obviously not by yourself. You can have people, but joining a collective or being part of a day free press or any type of thing will do more harm than good. And I'll give you a simple example why. You, well, not you specific, but someone like you, you have X amount of dollars, right? You can nod, it's cool. Nod? Okay, cool. You have X amount of dollars. You are coming to my site. You say, oh, here's a shirt, here's a book, I like it. But then you see a link, then you see a banner to another site. So you're discovering more and more sites. Suddenly, you're not reading just my comic anymore, you're reading 400 comics, but you still only have that same $20. So am I gonna get it? Probably not. I look at it like that. I look at it like, I wouldn't link. I don't. It sounds selfish and it sounds horrible. I'm sorry, not really, but it's a business. If you want to make, if you're a hobbyist and this is not your full time gig, fuck, do what you want. You know, like, link, have fun with it, join as many collectives as you like. But if you're serious about seeing a financial return from this, you got to look out for yourselves. Yeah, your friend might have a great webcomic. Don't link them. It sounds like an asshole. But you're only going to hurt yourself.
Actually, can I offer a rebuttal to that?
Please. You want the...
Oh, by all means.
That's your competition.
So, if we kind of take this model of we have reader A with dollar amount X coming to my site, and suddenly they see the link to everyone else's site, and suddenly that $20 gets dispersed somewhere else, and I don't see any amount of it, there's an inverse side to that, and it's an important, I think I've come to find that as far as getting myself out there and my name out there, networking has been a very big, a boon to an artist. It's always good to, if you're working in any kind of field like this where, you know, you're making a webcomic, you're basically doing your artwork for free and then expecting people to pay you. So what you want to do is you want to network so you meet other people and you have, I link to you, you link back to me. Now, I have that person with the $20 and suddenly I have like 10 other links, they go 10 other ways. Those 10 other people, they're coming back to me. Those 10 other people with their $20, and suddenly I'm an option for them, and the horizons are broadened, and it's kind of like, you look, like the example was, you know, Mr. Storm's example was, you know, the $20 in this one little cell going everywhere else, and every other cell around there, there's another guy with $20. And the more people you know, the more good relations you have, the
See,
more
that,
connections.
The problem there is you're assuming that the same people are going out as they're coming back in.
Well, it's kind of...
It never works that way.
But there's always fresh blood that comes from other people.
The problem, another problem is that webcomics are very... We're all incestuous. You know, it's the same audience that we are circulating over and over and over again. The trick here is how do we get people who don't read webcomics? That's who you should be going after. Like, let's say your comic is about horses.
Mm-hmm.
All right, who doesn't love a horse, right? Why are you trying to link to other webcomics? Why don't you go after horse magazines? Why don't you call them up and say, hey, listen, I do a comic about horses. Would you like to feature me in your magazine? Think outside instead of that. We just keep going in the same circle over and over again.
Actually, if you have other artists and you work with other people, they're working other genres, other stories, you get different kind of like blood coming in. And I know as far as I go, I've gotten a couple emails saying, hey, I don't normally read webcomics. This is like the first webcomic I've ever seen. I've just brought a new reader into the, you know, the whole incestuous webcomic, you know, daisy chain going on here. So, like... your comic about, you know, sex and business. I've got my comic about blood and zombies, and you go, oh, I love sex. And the guy who likes sex, oh, I love zombies. They bring it in, mix it together. You see what kind of wonderful
obviously
things.
Obviously, there's a couple of different ways to look at this, but it's good to hear both sides.
I really kind of like the zombie sex one.
Yeah, one man's session was better. Yeah, okay.
Over.
Mr. Jones, I believe you had a question. If you can stop laughing.
Are you going to teach anyone?
Anyway, do you guys visit other people's comics? I at the moment, I have about 40 to 60 different comics that
I go to just daily. I just have a in Firefox say open all this and you want to open this thing?
That's a lot of tabs.
Yes, it takes me about a half hour going through them all. But or do you keep away from them to prevent? I know comedians sometimes stay out of the improvs so that people can't claim that you stole my idea or you stole my plot. Or you just stay away.
I read very few webcomics. The comics that I read, I'm not just necessarily reading them for entertainment, but there's something about those comics that I can learn from. So when I read comics, I might have like 4 or 5 comics that I actually go to. I don't have time to sit there and, you know, read 50 million web comics, but I do like to see what other people are doing because, you know, I'm looking at it from a business angle. How is this person able to go ahead and, you know, generate some revenue from their readers? What are they doing that I'm not doing that I can work on? So, you know, there's a few strips that I follow in terms of like actual entertainment, but that is a very narrow margin. Just because I'm too busy making webcomics to actually read webcomics.
I'm kind of the other side of that coin. I do read quite a few webcomics. Partly is the other side of your argument. If I know what everyone else is doing, I can try and steer clear of it a little bit. But you can also get a feel for what kind of trends, you know, people are picking up on and play with that. You know, either go that route or choose to go, you know, to specifically avoid it. And, you know, there's just something, you know, a lot of inspiration, you know, even if you do get an idea, you know, something can, you know, you can get one idea that'll totally send you in a different direction and get a lot of inspiration from a lot of other people's work.
Mr. Smith, you have a question?
I've been reading webcomics for a pretty long time, and I've noticed that a lot of times conventions kind of content related, but a lot of conventions kind of, I don't mean conventions like this, but common conventions pop up where like roommates playing video games, they're real strong.
I've never heard of that one.
one of the conventions that bothers me though with webcomics almost as a whole is that there seems to be a lack of strong female characters when it's in a comic, really not necessarily, it's not wrong, but
I think we all write what we know, and I don't know women. Like, I'm married.
I don't see how anybody can take them.
Yeah, like, I don't know, you know, I read it from where, you know, I think in my beautiful world that thing should be. But, I don't know. I don't pretend to know. I try. I fail.
I have found a trend. I went to Savannah College of Art and Design, and I majored in comic books. Yes, they have a major... I agree in comic books. And when I started in 98, I was one of maybe 4 or 5 other girls who were majoring in comic books. At each class that had a 20-person class, there might be one girl in the class. After 4 years, there was 5 girls in each class. The conventions that I go to, I notice more and more, instead of the girlfriend being led around by the boyfriend, the girlfriend is leading the boyfriend around and going, no, I want to go see this. So I found that anime is bringing a lot more women into comics. Children and girls are coming into comic shops more. If we can get them in with the Naruto, then we can spring them with maybe Fables and Runaways. So hook them in. And I found with webcomics and the internet, comic books, DC and Marvel, it's hard for the girls to identify with Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. But with a lot of the web comics, more we're breaking the tradition of spandex, and so we're doing our own thing. And so a lot more women are coming into web comics because we don't really feel like we have to go into the comic shop and fight with the gamers to get our books. So I'm seeing a lot more women in the alternative industries doing their own thing. So hopefully we're changing some of that.
Yes.
There are some more comics I've seen that they will add pages if you make a certain donation. Do you think that would decrease the quality of the comic? If you add pages that was paid for, do you think that would decrease the quality of
the comic? Depends on the comic, the guy who's doing it. I mean, there's like a certain amount of someone paid for this. And whenever I was doing some custom comics where people would pay for stuff that I would write, I feel like there's a little more pressure to it. And I've never done, like, donation, get an extra page type thing for a month or a week or whatever. But it seems like there'd be an added, like, pressure of trying to do a good page. So I hope maybe they do a good job. I don't know if there's any instances where that's happened. Can anyone think of that? Or was someone just like, here's an extra page. Poops in their hand. Scan. Has that ever happened? Yeah, I think it would be a face pressure people to do good.
I don't think people would be paying to... they either will stop paying or there will be a whole lot more payments if that kind of
thing. Yeah. I generally... I don't like the concept of donations. I don't... And any, don't call it... If you want to give extra content, call it extra content, call it premium content, something else. But what upsets me more than anything is a new comic, before they have like three strips up in their archive, and they already have a donate button. We're not hobos in the street. We're not looking for handouts, and that's what it says to me, and it just bothers me. If you want to show your support, if you want to purchase something, go through our stores. That's the way, that's how you can give back. It's just commerce. We don't need, we're not looking for handouts.
Yeah, I want to add to this a lot. I mean, there's a lot of questions about the financial benefits of webcomics and how you make money doing this and the donations and the stores. And honestly, if you want to do a webcomic, I don't know about all of you, but did any of you get into the webcomics because you guys wanted to make money? Is that why you guys did comics?
There's money in webcomics?
Yeah. Putting your comic up on the web is the reason a lot of comics start off on the web is because it's free to do that for us and for everybody else. It costs no money to do it. So, you know, for me, I put my comic on the web just to, because I wanted to draw the comic and I want people to read it. I was looking for a readership. That's kind of how I look at success. If I'm not making any money off of it, but I have a lot of people reading the comic, I feel very successful. And like you said, if what I would like is people coming to the store, buying the books that I'm collecting, buying T-shirts or posters or prints and things like that, because they're showing support for the comic and for the material. And I think most people that buy that stuff are buying it for that. They want to support the book, they want to support the comic. But I think very few people go out there and just try to go, oh, you know, I'm thinking of a new financial endeavor, and webcomics sounds like that's the place to go.
Get rich quick.
Yeah. I think really the big point is just if you really want to draw comics, just put your passion into it. Don't think about the financial aspect. That will come if the passion shows in the comic.
Do it for yourself. Do it because it makes you laugh or it moves you in some way. You know, if I don't laugh at a comic, it doesn't go up. I'm doing it for anybody else. We do it for us.
Yeah.
And hope you guys, follow.
Or laugh. Yeah. You can't really go into like a kind of, like I said before, the kind of business where, all right, I'm going to give all my artwork away for free. I'm going to make a lot of money doing this.
It's a great business model. Huh?
Really,
it's,
I think one of the biggest misnotions of webcomics is the fact that, you put something on the web and instantly you're going to get this huge readership. That's just absolutely a farce. You know, it's not going to happen. Do it because you enjoy it and use it to build your skill. There's a lot of webcomics that have started out that, quite frankly, are still very poor. You've got to constantly work at building your writing skills, your drawing skills, and evolve it to an art that you can appreciate and enjoy. So many people settle with mediocrity and they just keep kind of on cruise control, and you should never want to do that. You want to go ahead and constantly, just build it.
You can use like webcomics as a place to learn with no, like, it doesn't cost you anything. You know, the web space, what I'm told, is pretty easy to get, I hear. You can just try what you want. Eventually, then you see what the next step is. But for now, just you learn. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to see. Oh, sorry. Go for
it. Back to basics from webcomics. It is very rare that I've actually seen any two different artists with the same style. So, like, when you guys, like, have 7 people up there,
I can't draw those, so I probably don't count. Okay. So I'll just sit back.
All right, 6. So we have 6 artists up there.
And a writer.
Up there. And I doubt that you all have the same style. And I was wondering, how do you guys find your style? And if you've ever seen each other's works, like, what would be the differences between your styles?
Repetition is the easiest way to find a style.
It's good on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the first comic and the most recent comic of anything that's been going on for more than a couple years, and the style will have changed. Garfield. If you look at the original Garfield, nothing like he is now.
Whatever happened to Lyman?
Oh, yeah, it was
Lyman. Oh, God.
And so pretty much the I never went out looking for a style. I had somebody describe mine as anime gothic. Really? What? I was influenced by ElfQuest and Strangers in Paradise. So it's a little bit to the left. So as far as if you're trying to... I don't think that you should try to find a style. You should just draw.
It's not to find you. Yeah. I think that's really the way it works. I don't think when I set out to draw PC in these drawings, I just had this particular style. I was learning as I was going on. When I built my webcomic, and when I started creating my webcomic, I didn't really have any drawing skills. I still claim that I don't have any drawing skills, but I draw better than I did before. You just have to keep your eyes and ears open, be receptive to other influences, look at books, take classes, and constantly keep drawing. And eventually that style is something that's going to kind of, you know, you'll realize it later on. It's like, wow, I've got a style. But it's not something that I actually actively go out to seek.
I think you're influenced by different artists, though, and that can kind of influence your style as well. That doesn't interrupt somebody else. But that's something else too. You'll look at somebody's style and go, that reminds me of so and so, and that reminds me of so and so, and it's, they might have been influenced by that person. And most oftentimes they are, even subconsciously. And not that they're looking to draw exactly like that person, but it will influence their work.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I know that some of you draw comics daily, and then there are others that I draw once a week, twice a week. For those of you who draw once or twice a week, from the business aspect of it, do you ever feel like do you feel any pressure to draw daily, thinking that you're missing out on or getting behind the folks who are drawing daily?
God bless those people that draw daily comics. I don't know how you guys do it.
Again, it's pretty easy.
I lifted a finger.
I mean, there's, you know, some days, you know, I look at Dinosaur Comics, and man, that's a funny comic, you know, but, you know, it's the same thing over and over again. And God bless that guy, man. You know? Because he's making a killing doing that. But I think it's whatever you're capable of. I only do mine once a week because I'm doing a zillion other things during the week. And it's not even, you know, I have other comic projects that I'm working on. So for me, it's tough to do that, but...
I think that the... Yes. As someone who...
No, it's my turn. Be quiet.
As someone who only updates twice a week, I only update twice a week because it takes so long to do each comic because I put a lot of detail, a lot of shading, and a lot of effort into, you know, polishing the product. So instead of looking at a daily strip and saying, gee, I wish I could update 5 days a week, I take a look at it from the archive perspective. You get a new reader going through the archive, they're going to see like 200 pages all in a row that have, you know, a lot of time and a lot of effort put into it, and they're going to read it one after the other, and they don't see the 2 or 3 days between each strip when they initially find the comic. So you get a product and you get your artwork, and it's got a lot of polish to it, and you might not update every day, but the new reader isn't going to notice that. They're just going to see all the artwork one by one by one, and you might not have as many strips out as someone who updates every day, but if you put the time and the effort into it, you can get a lot more polish to it, and that will keep readers in pretty easy on its own, so it kind of balances out. So.
And another part of this, too, is by finding a schedule that you're comfortable with, I think consistency is really important. If you push yourself to go 7 days a week and, after 4 days you start missing updates and you're not, next thing you know, you get frustrated and quit, and that does a lot more harm than just starting out saying, I'm just going to do it once a week, and keep a steady one day a week that everyone can rely on. I think in the long run, you're going to help yourself.
I found if you're talking about the business side of things,
I found that, personally, I have one comic that's updated 7 days a week, and the other one is updated 2 days a week, so I can kind of see the comparisons between the two. I find that a heavier schedule, it's easier to bring in new people, because A, those archives are huge, but then they can still come back tomorrow for something else. The other side of it, on a purely business standpoint, a larger archive means more banner impressions. You know, and that's, you know, at least I can do, we have almost 2,000 strips. So if I get a new reader and he sits through 18 hours and reads all of them, he just got me 2,000 banner impressions. So, you know, you gotta kinda balance that up.
Like, what do you do when you're
faced
with artist block?
Pardon me?
Artist block. You're faced with artist block.
I just call Lar on my list. All right, knock this shit off.
Are you talking about artist block or writer's block?
Well,
if you can't write a strip, can't think it'd be funny. You're talking about, like, if you feel your style is stagnating, you can't do anything about it.
It doesn't matter.
Anything, all of them, each one.
Block.
Block in general is push through it. That's the best thing you do.
Caffeine and sleep debt.
Sleep debt.
I support Red Bull.
3 a.m. Best ideas.
Listen to
our drops. Oh, well.
It really is best to just push through it at any point. If you feel you're doing a terrible job writing, can't think of anything, get a sketchbook and draw some shitty little comics. You don't have to post them. Just draw something. Get it out of you. Get your mind working. Especially with art. If you find yourself stagnating, try something you normally wouldn't do. Get a comic book and just be like, I'm going to try and draw like that and feel how they do it. Don't just copy it. Just don't put a trace over it and go, yeah, I'm done. Just feel how they actually do the art, how they do the line work and stuff like that. You just got to push through it. Just push it out of your mind. Push it. Fuck, you're pooping. Push it.
Another way to look at it, well, how we do things is we have a buffer. At any given time, we're about 1 or 2 months ahead. So if there's a day I just can't write, I don't write. I wait. Because my strip for tomorrow and the next week and the week after that is already done. So I can sacrifice. Some days I'll write 5 strips in a day, and then the next day I'll be sitting on my computer and I just can't do shit. So buffers are good.
Yes.
Yes. So when you guys initially started webcomics, did you feel that you were going to go through the whole thing alone? Promotion and all the other aspects that come along.
Yeah.
I thought that the clouds would open up and the light would come down and the publisher or Marvel or somebody would come down from the heavens and say, you know, please, you know, you're brilliant. Here, sit there and draw every day and we'll send you a paycheck. Yeah,
I'm sure
that didn't happen. And I also realized that also came with a contract that I didn't want to sign. I didn't want them to have my babies. You know, that you put your heart and soul and your work into this. You want it to be yours. You don't want to give it to somebody else. So I realized, and then I got a publisher, and I realized that they're not putting as much work into it as I am. And I got another publisher, and I realized that they had different priorities than I did. And they weren't telling me what was going on with my baby. That they took it and left, and I didn't hear from them for a year. And so I decided to be on my own because I wanted to know what was going on, and I wanted to have control over it.
You'll learn a lot by doing it all on your own, too. I think if there's an inclination where you can hand off your work to other folks or, you know, get someone else to do advertising for you, there's that gap of knowledge that you're going to have. You'll learn a ton just by having to struggle through that entire process yourself. I mean, you've got to be a one-person advertising group, you've got to be a writer, artist in some cases. You've got to be wearing multiple hats, promotional person.
You look at, like, all these guys now who are in traditional, you know, newspapers, and they're editorial cartoonists, and they're refusing to evolve into the next stage, let's call it, or other mediums, just because they don't know how. Because if I'm writing Garfield, for example, I don't like using that cat, but if you are writing Garfield, then the guy at Universal is
Universal?
What I want to say is, he's taking care of everything for you. And it's not like he reports to you, he doesn't tell you what he's doing. So if that's out of the picture, you don't know how to market, you don't know how to sell, you don't know. So, you know, try, like you said, try as many hats as you can, learn.
Yeah,
You find out what works for you. I start getting addicted to merchandise. I love the idea of playing cards and shot glasses.
Slap bracelets
and hand sanitizer and toothpaste and frisbees. And, oh, the website is a web... the internet is a
toothpaste, really?
Toothpaste. Frisbees. Yeah, well, no, I did hand sanitizer. I figured toothpaste might have been lost on conventions. Sell, okay? Motivators.com.
Deodorant.
Yeah, they make that too, but again, hand sanitizer is not selling. I'm not.
How do you spell that?
Soap with the.
I was kidding.
All right, we got time for one more question.
Bam.
Who's special? You're in the back row. Not that you're special, just that.
I actually have a question for those of you who write multiple comics, like at the same time. Do you have problems with your characters, especially with characters from different high schools, similar in as you support them, becoming too similar, or is it pretty easy to keep everything separate?
Yeah,
that's
good
too.
Sure. a little bit. One of the biggest problems I have, one of the scripts I write and somebody else does the artwork. And for some reason, I find that almost, you know, even more confusing. I'll write a whole script with one of the characters named wrong. I'll put the name from one of the characters from another strip, and you know, she knows who I mean. But you know, that's happened to me. But for the ones I draw, I think a lot of times I try to write visually. A lot, you know. I'll usually, you know, write with the sketching, and so by connecting by making sure your characters have a different look, you know, that certainly helps the characterization come out and helps keep them unique in terms of the writing as well as the art.
Anyway, that's me.
Make it quick.
Hey, I want to take all the time I want. The separate comics I've had in the past and do now, I always think, is there something different I'm doing here? Is it story-based? Is it more gag? Is there something else with it? And with Horrible and Gun Show, for me, there's two different things for it. This Horrible is this autobiographic, obviously. It's little bits of my life, and then I just, you know, kind of blow it out of proportion because that's funnier than just going, I ate a sandwich. And then
awesome.
Maybe I will do that. It's and then Gun Show is, for me, it was a work in the 3-panel format because I never really did, and to me it's like a different thought process of doing that because the whole life I never really did. So I always try and look at it as something that there's different there that I can work with, and I guess that does confuse a lot of people sometimes, but I can't help it. I'm special.
All right, I got about 5 minutes left, and I want to pass the microphone down to everybody one more time because the webcomics, and I believe no one actually gave their website address when they did this, so let's make sure everybody knows where you can find them.
Google-ish.
Yeah, but Google-ish. It's hard for some people.
I do the Devil's Panties, and it's www.thedevilspanties.com because I didn't grab the URL fast enough. Devil's Panties is actually the fan site. I need to go talk to him about that. but I also have heapisongrade.com, and that's a LARPing comic, and I've got a vampire comic that I don't know where it is on the internet. I lost track. Adolescent vampires. But yeah, that's it.
Mine's easy. I just have one. It's www.deadwinter.cc, and .cc is a domain everyone keeps. Is that real? It's not really. .cc. So.
It's a Canadian thing.
It's a cool show.
Shut up. You can find all my stuff, old and new, at rumblo.com. R-U-M-B-L-O.
No, that's not suggested at all.
My comic Cow and Buffalo can be found at cowandbuffalo.com. So it should be an easy one. But I do some other comics as well, and they're all located at cowshell.com. There's a comic called Cleopatra in Space, another one called Seed. So everything can be found there.
I do Zortik, which is originally enough at Zortik.com. Of course, all my other stuff you can get to from there, but I also do ETI, ETI-DI.com, and Abby's agency at and Abby's agency is abbysagency.us for secret government reasons and interview.
At least I could do, you can find that creatively enough, leastikadoo.com or also licd.com, and looking for group you can find it at lfgcomic.com.
You can find my work at pcweenies.com. Can everyone say that? pcweenies.com. And you get to uncube from pcweenies, so pcweenies.com.
And don't forget the GigCast.
All right, now this this panel will be up on the GeekCast feed. GeekCast is a webcomics podcast. I'm the host, J.T. Shea, also founder of Mike Geek Studios and MikeGeek.com. Let's give these guys a great hand. So if you can find most of them out of Sally, I believe, at least I could do is over in the merchant section.
Booth 713.
Booth 713.
I'm over where the white
one's at. Yeah.
White nine, right.
And the GeekCast and a bunch of Nike guys are over in the brown group section. But go visit everybody. Yeah, we are in White Tilt, I believe, in the town of Buffalo. You're in that room, the Woodhouse over in Nike. So we're all good. See you there. Thanks for coming, folks. And again, NikeGeek.com.
This has been the GeekCast. Remember, all links mentioned on today's show can be found at our homepage at www.thegeekcast.com. The GeekCast asks, what's your gig? Let us know. Drop us a line at gigcast@nightgig.com or call our voicemail line at 1-206-203-3334. The best we played every week on the show. Help us help you let people know what is your night gig. Music for the GeekCast provided by Beatnik Turtle at beatnikturtle.com and by Corey Smith at myspace.com/TheCoreySmith. The GeekCast is a production of NightGig Studios at nightgig.com, where it's not about what you do to live, it's about what you live to do. NightGig.com. What's your gig?